Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. We have spoken on this show before with Richard Davidson. His work at the University of Wisconsin is at the leading edge of the science of emotions. Davidson is the co-founder of the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds at the university's Waisman Center. His work was spurred by a 1992 challenge from the Dalai Lama to apply science in studying positive qualities of the mind. That work, especially surrounding his study of meditation, is the subject of a film called Free the Mind that will be featured Monday at the Milwaukee Film Festival. Lake Effect's Dan Harmon reached Davidson from his office in Madison, and Davidson talked about how the science of meditation has evolved.
Things have really dramatically changed in the last 5 years in particular, but certainly there was a time when the thought of engaging in serious scientific research on meditation was really an oxymoron, and it was like oil and water. But that really has changed a lot, and we now have a conceptual framework in which to understand how these effects may arise, and that conceptual framework really comes from neuroscientific research on the nature of plasticity in the brain. The brain is an organ that changes in response to experience and in response to training, and it is through those changes that presumably the alterations in our experience and behavior that are produced by meditation occur. And modern research is teaching us that there are functional as well as structural changes in the brain that arise as a consequence of different kinds of meditation practice. This is really making it much more acceptable and a much broader range of the scientific community, I think, is quite open to this now.
What kind of involvement did you have with the subjects in the documentary?
Well, they were all participants in research that we were engaged in, so we had quite a bit of contact with them.
Okay, so you were able to follow them beginning to end from the documentary.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I just found the choices interesting. A boy who had a fear of elevators, and then contrasting with veterans returning. I think they were all Iraq War veterans. Any surprises, or were you fairly confident that they would all benefit from meditation?
Well, first, in terms of the juxtaposition of the work that we're doing with young children with the veterans who are coming back from the Middle East, that was a choice that was made by the filmmaker, and we really did not have any direct involvement in that choice. That was an artistic choice, and she felt that they really could be interestingly portrayed together. And I think my sense of it is that it really does work. In terms of your question about whether we had confidence that these procedures were going to work, there's certainly a lot of reason and background to suggest that they're reasonable to try. I don't think any scientist would think that these procedures are going to work in everyone. And in fact, one of the key questions in future scientific research is to better understand which kinds of practices work best for which kinds of people. Because I think the notion that one size does not fit all is certainly true of this area, as well as looking at the impact of virtually any other kind of intervention on psychological or psychiatric processes.
One of the subjects who was an Iraq War veteran, younger guy, he said that he has to keep busy all the time, that he cannot stop his mind. And I found that interesting. And it just leads, the question to me is keeping busy a form of denial, or is it a form of coping? Is it a form of both? And I think towards the end of the documentary, he actually started to benefit from it, from meditation.
Yeah, I mean, keeping busy is a form of distraction. That's something that I think many people use either implicitly or explicitly to sort of crowd out anxious thoughts and anxious feelings. If we're occupied with other activity, we pay less attention to what's going on inside. You know, that's why people get enjoyment from sort of mindless entertainment like watching television, because it does the same thing. It fills the mind with neutral kinds of activity that blocks out unwanted cognitive intrusions. The problem with those strategies is that they're all transient. They don't last. And the once the distraction ends, the thoughts begin to re-emerge.
At one point in the documentary, you say you were very influenced by the visit from the Dalai Lama. Can you tell us how that, I'm not sure what your thoughts were before his visit on meditation, but did that have a transformation as far as your views on meditation?
Well, it's broader than that. I mean, I first met the Dalai Lama in 1992. He invited me to meet with him at his residence in India to discuss the possibility of doing research on individuals who've spent years transforming their mind through these kinds of practices. But the challenge that he really posed to me was this. He said, you've been using the tools of modern neuroscience to study qualities like anxiety and fear and depression. Why can't you use those same tools to study kindness and compassion and other kinds of positive qualities? And that was a very significant challenge, and one that I have very much taken to heart. And it's a challenge that really inspired us to take on this whole other realm. And it also relates to the conjecture that mental health is not simply the absence of mental illness. And so being able to alleviate certain symptoms is not the same as cultivating positive qualities of mind that may produce a kind of enduring well-being.
And the documentary didn't go into the spiritual side of this. I'm wondering what your thoughts are. People who don't really consider themselves religious or spiritual, I'm sure, could benefit from meditation, but can the two be separated?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what spiritual means. The way we approach meditation is from a scientific perspective. The Dalai Lama has encouraged us to use secular approaches to the teaching of these practices so that they are amenable and acceptable to individuals from any religious background, or for that matter, to atheists who have no religious convictions. And from a psychological and neuroscientific perspective, these are strategies to train the mind, and they should work independent of one's religious beliefs. So from our perspective, what we're doing really has nothing to do with religion, and it's compatible with any kind of religious tradition.
Maybe on its more basic level, the phrase was used in the documentary, calming the mind. That seems to be the theme of all of this.
Certainly, calming the mind is indeed an important theme. And these kinds of meditation techniques that are featured in the film can help individuals, we think, to calm their mind. And by calming their mind, we mean producing a trait, an enduring characteristic of equanimity that fundamentally changes a person's relationship to their emotions and to adversity, so that it's not that negative emotions don't occur or worrisome thoughts don't occur, but rather they don't hijack a person. And so one's relationship to those thoughts or that adversity changes. And that's really what we're trying to get at with equanimity.
One of the parts of the documentary that surprised me the most is that kids, very young kids, I'm guessing they were five, six maybe, were...
Five.
They were five? Okay.
Yeah.
And they were benefiting from meditation. They actually were able to just sit down calmly and meditate, which you don't normally associate with five-year-olds.
We've known about other efforts that are similar with children of this age, and there was every reason to think that if it was presented in an age-appropriate way, that these practices, in fact, can be adopted by children as young as five. And one of the things we know from modern neuroscience is that the brain is more plastic at that age. That's why children of that age can learn a second language more easily. That's why children of that age can learn to play a musical instrument more easily. We reason that if we can cultivate these healthy habits of mind in these very young children, we can instill the building blocks for positive developmental trajectory that can then have multiplicative effects as the children develop. And the kids really sort of naturally glommed onto this. And once they tasted in their own experience what this is like, there's a natural resonance. The children really very much enjoy being calm and enjoy the benefit comes along with it. And they want it more.
Well, it was a very interesting documentary. Richard Davidson, thank you for coming on Lake Effect.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Richard Davidson is a professor of psychology and psychiatry and the founder of the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. His work is the focus of a documentary called Free the Mind, which will show Monday at the Milwaukee Film Festival. Davidson will also be on hand that night. You'll find more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That's Friday's edition of Lake Effect. We're produced by Dan Harmon, Stephanie Lecce, and Bonnie North, with the able assistance of Eleanor Peterson and Nathan Royster. And for the third time in recent weeks, we say farewell to another Lake Effect staffer, Amy Kiley, who leaves Milwaukee to take on afternoon drive time responsibilities in Orlando, Florida. Amy, we will miss you, but we'll think of you the next time we're wearing our Mickey Mouse ears. I'm Mitch Tyke. Have a terrific weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I hope we'll be part of your plan Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 3 with Lake Effect Weekend from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.